And welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Watchful. And friends, we are back with an exciting theory. I know, Matt, we said like we were thinking about jumping right into a Storm of Swords last week. But guess what, friends?
We have one more thing on the plate.
That's right. We have one more thing on the plate. We hadn't quite figured out. And really, also, we have a couple vacations, a couple other things coming up. So we thought we would drop one more very good, very well thought out, well written theory that I think is it brings to light other ideas and theories. There's a lot of things you can jump off from in terms of who this person is and how it matters to the story. It's just kind of fascinating. I stumbled across this and I really think it's, and now it's long. It's going to take us a bit. There are probably three parts to this, and we might do parts one and two for you guys here on the feed, or we might do two and three over on Patreon. Not sure, but really, part one will give you a lot of what you need, and you from there you will even, I believe, be highly encouraged to go dive down your own rabbit holes. It is a little tinfoil, and then we're going to start the prologue. We're going to get into a Storm of Swords and all that good stuff. We'll have guests back on too. We plan on having some guests back on the show. That was fun. I hope you guys enjoyed that, by the way.
You know, yeah, so absolutely. So yeah, who is the elder brother of the Quiet Isle? Mega tinfoil essay. This is from Toodles, right? Who I'm pretty sure we've read from before.
We have.
I'll look this person up while you get started here, just to see.
Yes. Go ahead. So again, this is just to kind of set the stage here in terms of who is the elder brother. We're just gonna pull up the wiki page here. This is a place where Brienne of Tarth shows up, and the elder brother is kind of in charge of the Quiet Isle. He's the leader of a septary on the Quiet Isle, and he's reputed to have powers as a healer, and his name is unknown. Now, his description is given. He's a tall man, large, square head, shrewd eyes, veined red nose, a heavy jaw. All of those descriptions, by the way, matter, and this theory is going to show you that. He's got a shaved head. He was the third son of a family of knights, and he had nothing to offer the woman he wanted to marry but the shield, sword, and horse of his own knighthood. He fought for House Targaryen at the Battle of the Trident, which is huge. He fought for House Targaryen, and he was knocked unconscious. Others thought him dead, so they stripped his armor and possessions and dumped his body into the Trident. He floated downstream, where he awoke naked on the Quiet Isle. He spent the next 10 years in silence. So, in the Feast for Crows, Brienne of Tarth, Sir Hyle Hunt, Podrick Payne, Septon Maribald meet the elder brother on the Quiet Isle. He tells them of the raid on Salt Pans and the end of Sandor Clegane. And he informs Brienne that it was Arya Stark who Sandor held captive, not Sansa. And that's really kind of the guy we're talking about. And this, we're following Brienne's story, and she shows up to meet this guy. So, yeah, okay. let's get ready to dive into this. And I might have to pause. Again, it's long, so if I have to pause here for a second just for a breather, you guys bear with me. But
it's big.
And I like his preface here. He kind of talks about that his reasoning, and he says, my reasoning and imagining is inductive as hell. I try to adduce scenarios that are consistent with the facts and which make better sense of them for me than conventional explanations. Song of Ice and Fire isn't a creativity-free logic puzzle. It's literature. It's 5/5 of the way into A Song of Ice and Fire. If 5/5 of the way through A Song of Ice and Fire, we could actually deductively prove my theories by brute force of logic, A Song of Ice and Fire would be an awfully crappy mystery. That's a good point. Like, I think sometimes, like, if it's so obvious and if it's just so painted out and it's like this puzzle that you can figure out very easily, then that's why the literary evidence and thematics are so important. You know, George wants us to go along for that ride, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So this huge theory does stuff some people hate. It raises the dead. It alleges secret identities, makes apparently minor characters important. Hopefully I can show how the crazy stuff I think is happening is consistent with a tight, dramatic, compelling, tragic, irony-laden mystery story. And I hope it's interesting and entertaining, if nothing else. On the other hand, if you like tinfoil, you're in for a treat. And that's where he had me. I'm like, I'm down. Tinfoil, give it to me. Let's go. So let's go into the background and the readings and the ideas here. So this post began with a simple question. Who is the elder brother of the Quiet Isle? And I think it's okay for me to say this, like this theory doesn't relate to what, like typically, Matt, what's out there is that the elder brother of the Quiet Isle is one of the, he could be either a trueborn or bastard born. He's a member of House Dairy, which is the reason I stumbled across this whole thing. As you guys know, a few episodes back, I was looking into House Dairy more, the Targaryen banners, Sir Willem Dairy helping out Dany and all that stuff, right? And Viserys as they moved around. So who the heck is this guy that fought in the Battle of the Trident, fought on the side of the Targaryens, was a knight? And a lot of people come to the conclusion that he is a Dairy. Well, you're not going to believe this guy comes up with, and it's actually fantastic. So, yeah, it ended up taking me for a wild ride. I never would have expected or believed if someone had pitched it to me at the beginning. I have no doubt what follows. I have no doubt what follows is easier to swallow if you believe something like my hypothesis, and he's got this whole other thing. You believe our story is likely to be deeply tragic and saturated with irony. You see one of A Song of Ice and Fire's central themes is the instability and inscrutability of identity, which, Matt, you've talked about that a lot. Like, there's all these different characters, right? He has a good situation. So it argues that A Song of Ice and Fire tells us that in most cases, characters will not recognize the true identity of character Y if character Y is disguised as and or claiming to be some character D. We will instead blindly recognize only character D, and what's more, they won't think twice about it. I think that was really well put, because we did a whole like who is who secret identities thing, and that's what happens. Our characters believe that character D is who character D says he is, but really he's actually character Y. I mean, it's
exactly right.
Yeah. So
no, 100% agree with that.
Yeah. All right. It wouldn't hurt also if you were ready to buy that there's something up with the Neo faith of the Sparrows. It seems to involve faceless men and an idea I talk about here. So he's talking about there's a really weird connection in all of this, and you guys are going to hear me talk about it in a second. It's the faceless men faction. So TFM, faceless men, he will refer to them a lot and thinks they're somehow connected to the Sparrows, but not directly. They're more of a Neo faith. So it seems to be, let's see. Yeah, he's arguing that the High Sparrow acts like a faceless man because he is, in fact, a faceless man. Even if you don't buy my thesis that the High Sparrow is a faceless man, skin changed into Balon Greyjoy's living body, like Bran's skin changes into Hodor, they are striking indisputable parallels between the High Septon and the Kindly Man, which suggests a relationship between the Neo Faith and the faceless men. And so, Matt, that link that you have there, where he says an idea I talk about here, if you click on that, it's a whole theory and connection where in which he likens the High Septon to the Kindly Man that we see at the house of Black and White, white and black. And so you have the faceless man connection, which is interesting. So this essay will play with the idea that a group of faceless men, or perhaps a related and or another group we don't know yet enough about to distinguish them from the classic faceless men. So like this is a kind of a quasi faceless men group have infiltrated and agitated and organized the grassroots orders of the faith. They are the wellspring of what I'm calling the Neo faith, a quiet heresy. And that propped up by the Sparrow and rooted in faceless men ideology in which the small folk of the Riverlands are akin to the slaves of old Valyria. So George does like to make those connections between the history and then, you know, what he told us in A World of Ice and Fire, and then seeing that repeat itself here again in Westeros is I think something that an idea that he likes. I submit that the base of this group of faceless men or faceless men equivalents on Westeros is the Quiet Isle. So the Quiet Isle, a place that's inherently isolated, convenient to Braavos, possessed of a large and growing graveyard, and primarily inhabited by monks who can't talk about their business. So you think about this again, the faceless men, people come there to die, right? They come for the gift of death and things. And like, you know, you have, they're assassins, and these guys are also tending graveyards. They're tending this monastery type of thing. And they are, if you look it up on a map, the Quiet Isle, and you look at the association to Braavos, it's interesting there too. So, I am unfortunately not able to provide a satisfactory fleshed out explanation of what exactly their project entails, of whether they are allied with or opposed to the Kindly Man and or any other factions, versions of the faceless man there may be, etc. What I can and will do, though, is argue that the elder brother is, like the grave-digging hound, actually a famous dead person. As a result of this identification and a related ID assumption, I then identified a second player living far away, which in turn focused my lens on their family, which then caused a tinfoil can of worms to burst open. In isolation, these worms might strike you as crackpot nonsense, but together they actually cohere into what is, for me, a shocking, sensible, dramatic narrative, one I hope to adequately convey herein. And I think the setup for all this is awesome. So it's all about wondering about the elder brother. And you can totally see as we get into this how he does stumble into different families and other you know, groups or whatever. So the Quiet Isle and the Faceless Men, holy duh, Batman, were actually pretty much slapped in the face with the fact that something's up with the Quiet Isle right away. If we're alert, we are. Yes. So here we go. We got a quote. Three men were waiting for them as they clambered up the broken stones that ringed the isle's shorelines. They were clad in brown and dun robes of brothers with wide bell sleeves and pointed cowls. Two had wound links of wool about their lower halves of their faces as well, so all that could be seen of them were their eyes. So in other words, the monks of the Quiet Isles are literally faceless, he says, Matt, right? So all you could see were their eyes. You could not see their faces. Therefore, they are faceless, right? Mm-hmm. Beyond this, there is a glaring, laughably obvious foregrounded mystery of the hound slash gravedigger. In my opinion, there is no mystery at all, nor is the gravedigger an example of how Gurm does secret identity when he's actually trying to fool us. Rather, like Artisan and Barristan, this is a great point. That was a pretty obvious thing, right? Artisan slash Barristan is right in front of our face. He's saying that the hound and the gravedigger is super effing obvious. All right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And we've talked about that a lot. Like, you have no doubt, Sir Matt, that the gravedigger is the hound, right?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it makes sense. So we're going to buy that. And so the mystery, it's also funny that George puts that in front of us. Like, who's this gravedigger guy? When really the question is, who's the elder brother? And that's what people have tried to find, is like the obvious thing is, like, George wants you to look at the obvious hound gravedigger guy, but really beyond that is this whole group and this whole faction, and specifically their leader, the head honcho, the elder brother. The obvious first thing to note is the elder brother has no name. He's a title, a role, an archetype, just like the kindly man, the high septon, and the shepherd of Dance of Dragons infamy. He's figuratively no one, just like a faceless man should be, just like the high septon is. What's he look like? So here we go. He could hardly be called elder for a start, whereas the brothers weeding in the garden had the stooped shoulders and the bent backs of old men. He stood straight and tall and moved with the vigor of a man in the prime of his years. Like, already as you're reading it, when you really slow it down, you think about it, Matt, it's like, okay, this guy's different from the other people working there, right? Nor did he have the gentle, kindly face she expected of a healer. So the whole kindly face, man,
kindly.
Right? Yeah, it's right there. It jumps right out. So nor did he have the gentle, kindly face she expected of the healer. His head was large and square, his eyes shrewd, his nose veined and red. Though he wore a tonsure, his scalp was as stubbled as his heavy jaw. He looks more like a man made to break bones than to heal them, thought the maid of Tarth. So, and then she tells the elder brother, you look more like a knight than you do a holy man. It was written in his chest and shoulders and across his thick, square jaw. Okay. So one more key. Dantum is squirreled away in dialogue towards the end of the chapter, far from the elder brother's main physical description. It's a huge key. It's a big nugget here, but it's so well hidden in plain sight that everybody, including the wiki, misses it completely. And he says, it's this fact right here. So the elder brother leaned forward, his big hands on his knees. So now after I read this, I was like, okay, big hands, whatever. You go to a Search of Ice and Fire, right? And holy smokes, it starts to connect to, like, people who have, like, these big hands and all the other things, like the bulbous nose and the red vein nose and all that kind of stuff. So he's driving somewhere, I promise you guys. Here we go. Armed with this description, it's clear that the elder brother doesn't stay at the Quiet Isle long after Brienne leaves. Sir Morgoth or Sir M, who he's going to call him. And by the way, just hold on, hold your britches here on Sir Morgarth, who appears as one of the three hedge knights hired by Littlefinger, along with Hallen Reed, a.k.a. Sir Shadrick, who, so he believes this is
the mouse, right?
Yeah, the Mad Mouse is Hallen Reed, and Sir Byron, probably a.k.a. Tyrick Lannister. So again, he's making a couple assumptions there, right? Is a burly fellow with a thick, salted, and peppered beard, a red nose bulbous with broken veins and gnarled hands as large as hams. So, assuming the elder brother's beard kept growing, the elder brother, now dressed as a knight, becomes Sir M. So he's kind of saying that later on, maybe this person is Sir Morgarth, but let's just go with this for a second here. So Sir M is burly, while the elder brother looks like a bone breaker and a knight, especially in his chest and his shoulders. Burly, heavy, strong, muscular, large, thick, all those things. Sir M has a large red bulbous nose, just like the elder brother. Sir M has gnarled hands as big as hams, while the elder brother not only might have matching hands, given that he, quote, his hands look more a man to break bones than to heal them. That was previously said about him. He definitely has big hands to match. And Sir M has a thick beard, and the elder brother has dense stubble, which would be ripe for a thick beard down the line. So he's making some physical connections between the elder brother and this Sir Morgarth. All right, Morgarth. Assuming Sir M and the elder brother are the same person gives us a more complete physical description overall. Note that salt and pepper beard indicates black hair going gray, which marries well with the elder brother being 44 years old, as he tells Brienne he is. So let's at least assume the elder brother is Sir M and he's after Sansa too. As we'll see, this may be because he's working on behalf of someone very close to another Stark. Okay, so Sir Morgarth, seriously. Okay. Fine, but who? Yeah, Morgarth.
Are we getting to this? Is going to be Morg?
not yet. Okay, fine, but who is the elder brother originally? My first thought upon realizing Sir Morgarth is somebody was, holy shit, the elder brother is Arthur Dayne, recovered from drunken depression after the tragedies of Robert's Rebellion. He's getting the Tower of Joy band back together with Hallen / Shadrick. I've posted about Arthur hooking up with Elia to beget Aegon and surviving the Tower of Joy, but I've got a stronger version coming. Like, this guy's this wild. I mean, some of the stuff he's throwing out, like Elia hooking up with Sir Arthur Dayne, just freaking crazy. So where did I get this idea from? Morgarth, as in dead Arthur. It seems a bit on the nose, no? But if the elder brother is Arthur, Arthur isn't a typical sexy Dane. It's certainly possible there are two different Dane looks, as with Arya and Sansa, or the Martell / Targaryens. And it would be pretty great if Sir Arthur Dayne is actually a hairy, homely dude. But what if the name is an in-world shout-out? Who is close to Arthur and missing? We don't know much about Jonathan Derry. Jaime remembers him as earnest and a good man. This seems accurate, albeit charitable, given the three passages we have. In the first, Derry snaps at Jaime when Jaime bristles at being left at King's Landing as Aerys' crutch before the Battle of the Trident. "I'm not a crutch, I'm a knight of the King's Guard." "Then guard the king," Sir John Derry snapped at him. "When you donned that cloak, you promised to obey." He again seems duty bound when Aerys rapes Rhaella. "We are sworn to protect her as well," Jaime had finally been driven to say. "We are," Derry allowed, "but not from him." In Jaime's fever dream, Derry has the same do your duty attitude. "He was going to burn the city," Jaime said, "to leave Robert only ashes. He was your king," said Derry. "Even a tinfoiler like me thinks he may be dead, if only because it's hinted by the elder brother. We bury them side by side, Stark and Lannister, Blackwood and Bracken, Frey and Derry." Okay, so again, he's looking for people that are close to Sir Arthur Dayne. So right there, he went with John Derry. Okay. So he's trying to make a connection that, you know, and this may seem like it goes kind of off on a tangent, but it stumbles into some other cool things. So I just want you guys to hang in here. Yeah. So you got John Derry, try to connect him to Sir Arthur Dayne. Now he's going to try to connect Prince Lewin Martell. He's going to look at him in relationship to the elder brother. So he was close to Arthur Dayne. Might he be the elder brother slash Sir M? We have no physical description. We know nothing much about his parents, nor about his older sister or Doran's, Oberyn's and Elia's mother, the Princess of Dorne, nor about the Prince of Dorne's husbands and consorts. We don't know how many siblings. Let me see. Yeah, that Lewin Martell and the Prince of Dorne have. Okay. Lynn Corbray supposedly kills a badly wounded Lewin Martell at the Trident, which flows to the Quiet Isle. Okay. So again, this guy was somebody who was badly wounded, like supposedly Prince Lewin was killed. But if he was just like this other John Derry guy, he could have floated down the river to the Quiet Isle. Peter said that Prince Lewin had been sorely wounded by the time the tide of the battle swept him to his final dance with Lady Forlorn. Arya Martell says that Lewin Martell was a great knight with a paramour. She's an old woman now, but she was a rare beauty in her youth, men say. There is a, in my opinion, not coincidentally, only one other thing in all of A Song of Ice and Fire that is called a rare beauty. The High Septon's last crown, sold by the current High Septon, who is, in my opinion, a faceless man. And if one rare beauty is connected with the faceless man, might not a second be connected? So he's kind of saying here that, like, that Prince Lewin Martell had a paramour who was called a rare beauty. The only other time that you find in A Song of Ice and Fire the term a rare beauty is the High Septon's last crown. And he's making connections between the Quiet Isle and the elder brother and this neo faith in, you know, like this grassroots uprising type of thing. So that's where he's making some of those connections. So basically, like, through them, he found this Prince Lewin possible connection. But anyways, Jamie groups Lewin Martell with Sirs Went and Derry. Good men, everyone. Selmy thinks Prince Lewin was a valiant brother in arms, as many could wish for. Prince Lewin was my sworn brother. In those days, there were few secrets amongst the Kingsguard. I know he kept a paramour. He did not feel there was any shame in that. So again, the paramour is mentioned. You know, anytime that George mentions a couple, it keeps consistent with this idea that there's this individual, it's a paramour. Like, there's no reason to add that extra detail unless it matters sometimes with George. So Arianna was only 6 years old when Lewin Martell died, but remembers he was tall as a tower. Not a ton to go on, yet Selmy conveniently reminds us that Quentin Martell is of the same blood as Lewin. So what does Quentin look like? So now he's trying to make a connection between, like, okay, Lewin Martell, we don't really know what he looks like. We don't really know what Sir Arthur Dayne looks like either, as he was mentioning that earlier, and John Derry. But he does stop here at Lewin Martell and says, okay, Quentin is of the same blood. So what does Quentin look like? And does Quentin in some way match the elder brother? All right. So Quentin Martell cut a poor figure. And this is funny because we just did a poor Quentin kind of theory the other day. He's short-legged and stocky, thickly built, with hair the brown of a new turned earth. His forehead was too high, his jaw too square, his nose too broad. A good honest face. A girl had called it once, but you should smile more. As I've argued elsewhere, mud in A Song of Ice and Fire is so brown as to be black, practically speaking. Assuming new turned earth is akin to mud, Quentin Martell has very dark brown, maybe black hair. Yeah, so cool. He's also, indeed, the Martell's Dornish blood is salty, meaning they're dark-haired and olive-skinned. All right. Danny registers Quentin Martell as solemn, stocky lad. His face was squarish, high forehead, heavy jaw, broad nose, stubble on his cheeks. His chin made him look like a boy trying to grow his first beard. Selmy describes him as short and stocky again. Arianna Martell's Quentin is plain, so plain. His head was overlarge, a sort of square. He looks too much like father. Aha! So we do know sort of who Doran looks like. Doran Martell looks like Quentin Martell. Ariana repeats his repeats this. Quentin looks like you, she tells Dora Martell in A Feast for Crows. Might we surmise that Dora Martell looks not wholly dissimilar to his mother's brother, including Lewin Martell? Okay. So again, actually, so Dora Martell's uncle was Lewin Martell. So thrice we're told Quint is stocky. While we might read this as polite, as a polite way of saying chubby, whatever, he's stocky. I'm going to skip on down here a little bit. All right. The lack of any reference to a fat, loose-necked of form suggests that he's short-legged. Quentin is thick and unshapely, but probably solid and sturdy. What about when Arion says he's too thick about the middle? As Belwas can attest, not large bellies. Or I'm sorry, yeah, as Belwas can attest, not all large bellies connotate slothfulness, right, or obesity. All right, so some of us are out there nodding, going, "Amen," right? Absolutely,
yeah, right.
You see, Quentin Martell lacks a model's figure, but this doesn't mean that he's a doughboy. So again, just more description here. Danny describes him as square face, flushed and ruddy from too much wine. Let me see here. Finally, despairing of the rest, Quentin Martell made his way to his solar, where he poured himself a cup of wine and drank it in the dark. The taste was sweet solace on his tongue, so he lit a candle and poured himself another. He's drinking alone, all this good stuff. All right, so there's just descriptions on Quentin Martell, which help us sort of understand maybe who Prince Lewin Martell is, and who Oberyn Martell, like what they look like. They're compared, I guess, in appearance. So how about Doran and Arion? First, Doran has gout. Gout has a strong historical association with the overconsumption of alcohol. And again, Quentin was pouring himself a little too much wine and was fond of the wine, right? We also know that Doran Martell looks like Quentin Martell. We can infer a few things. His knuckles were as dark as cherries and near as big. This is just the gout, right? So here we go. We're talking about knuckles in his hands. We're back to this idea of big hands being a thing inside the Martell family. So you got to follow this for a second, because the elder brother was described as having big hands, and now he's trying to suggest that maybe Doran has these big hands. So this is just the gout, right? Yet it's also consistent with gout, as it might impact big gnarled hands. Now look at this. Dora Martell's legs had been useless for 3 years, but there was still some strength in his hands and his shoulders. Logically, the last place to lose strength would be the places that are the strongest to begin with. Thus, this is a clever, subtle clue that when healthy, Dora Martell had big, strong hands and shoulders. He might resemble Quentin Martell, Dora Martell is probably tall like Lewin Martell. Where the sand snakes were tall, Arion took after her mother, who stood 5'2". So again, saying that, like, just because Quentin is short doesn't mean that his father wasn't tall. Maybe Arion and Quentin both kind of took after their mother being short. So he's going through like a lot of little details.
These are deep connections, but this is, I mean, it's good, because it's one of these things too. It's like the size of hands. It's like two people described having, it's like these right. are the things. It just goes to show you every time. It's like where I'm still amazed to this day that there's always these things you just overlook in A Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah. Exactly. And so, like, and you're going to see something that's real interesting here in a second as far as like their names. So it goes like, he doesn't just give you the physical description of the hands and all this different stuff, or like their physical features. He's going to do something with names here in a second that is really important too. So stick with us here. Arion, the only connection here is just that she also has like a round belly, and she's fond of wine, and she has black thick hair. They're just like the word choice around the Martells is thick and strong, broad shoulders, strong hands. Not super like, I mean, also tall, but not even necessarily like thin and whatever. I think we think of that from the show, but it's totally not really how they are described in the book, which is right. Interesting. So, all right, now, like, we're just doing this deep study here of the Martell family. So let's move to Elia and Oberyn. So of Elia Martell, we only know that she was of delicate health, frail and sickly, but possessed a delicate beauty. Her brother Oberyn has viper's eyes. He's tall, slim, and graceful, slender, fit, fierce. His face was lined with, he has these arched brows. Let me see here. Large eyes as black and as shiny as pools of of coal oil, a widow's peak as sharply pointed as his nose. Oberyn has slender hands and long strides. His thick black eyebrows are oddly mentioned twice. Oberyn complains that the wine he brings Tyrion in his cell isn't strong enough and even drinks before doing mortal combat with the mountain, as is norm. So I always drink before a battle. Oberyn Martell fathers Obarah Sand on a whore in 271, so at the age of 13, and in 273 finds the woman of the Westerlands too chaste and the wine too sweet. Both his sexuality and his booze palate are precarious, to say the least. Oberyn Martell laughs often. Let me see here. Yeah, he has a laugh. Yeah. Will it make me laugh? Write me songs. Care for me when I am sick and old. Yeah, they're just describing more about Oberyn Martell here. Let's see. Dorne thinks that Oberyn's bastard daughter, Obarah, is too fond of wine. So again, all these connections to wine. And this is all going back to the nose, Sir Matt. It's all going back to the nose being red and vain. So someone who drinks too much wine or who drinks a lot of alcohol ends up having, you know, some of these, like, could have like a nose like that, right? I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. So let me skip down here. Bonus tinfoil. He goes into some other stuff. He's always going on these tangents about like the mystery knight and making connections to other people. So we're going to skip down here to this. We're going to go back to the elder brother. The elder brother's elder brother. It's hopefully obvious where I'm headed, that the elder brother slash Sir M is the late Prince Lewin Martell. So that's who he believes right now, is that the elder brother, who he's also saying is maybe Sir Morgarth, is the late Prince Lewin Martell of Rhaegar Targaryen's Kingsguard, working for slash with a quote team of faceless men in Westeros on the Quiet Isle. Before I lay out a systematic comparison between the Martells and the elder brother, let's flesh out the family portrait with one more hitherto unknown Martell. The Prince of Dorne's younger brother. Let's see. You've got Arion Martell, Quentin. So, all right, this is where we get into the name thing. Watch, this is pretty cool. So, Quentin is spelled Q-U-E-N-T-Y-N. And you've got Tristain, which has the Y-N. And then you've got Oberyn, right?
Yeah.
And then Lewin.
Lewin.
Right? And this is the one that just stopped me in my tracks. He said Marwyn, the mage. Okay. Right? So it's the only time where you see sort of that style in naming. Quentin, Tristain, Lewin, Oberyn, and then Marwyn. So Pate could not deny that Marwyn looked more a mastiff than a maester. He's rumored to have killed a man with his fist. So now all of a sudden we're talking about Marwyn the Mage, a character that I like, who's at the Citadel, and he's working in the higher mystical kind of magical realm. And he's described as having a bull's neck. He looks more like a dockside thug. His head was too big for his body. It thrust forward from his shoulders. He had a slab jaw, short and squat, heavy in the chest and shoulders. This is all quotes, by the way. I'm reading these. Rock hard ale belly. His nose had been broken more than once. Sour leaf stained his teeth. He had the biggest hands that Sam had ever seen. It's ridiculous, Matt, but like the idea here is that Brienne, who's huge, right, sees the elder brother in notes at the very end, away from all the other descriptions to hide it, that he has massive hands. And then you go back and you study the Martell family and you say, wow, they have like a short, stockier, massive, bigger hand, bigger shoulders type figure. And then you figure out like, well, who else can we help kind of firm that up? Well, now if you buy that Marwyn the Mage is a Martell, look at his description. And he's got these, the biggest hands that Sam had ever seen.
Yeah.
I mean,
the only thing that, yeah. Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, no, it's, oh man, I'm just,
you tear it apart.
Well, I like it actually. It's causing me to actually think more about the idea of that, because Lady Sarah had sent us one, you know, a while, like a year, as like last summer, I think, about like, yeah, Maester Lewin being, yeah, Lewin Martell. And so,
yeah,
like, now I'm that, like, was, I don't know, man, it could be you know, like,
right. That was such a cool one to think that the Maesters, we don't really know always their last name or who or where they came from or how,
right,
they got into service. So like Marwyn the Mage, you're like, shoot, you know. Like, right, I know, exactly, you're supposed to forsake your house loyalties, but he's someone who, if he is a Martell and there's a connection between. Also, let me just, not that I want to go off on a tangent here, but guys, follow me for a hot second. I've said it before that Rhaenys Targaryen could be alive in the form of Sarella Sand. Because she looked Dornish, she smelled Dornish. 280 AC, she's alive. Sarella Sand, 280 AC, born. Elia and Oberyn were very close. He would clearly help his daughter or his sister's daughter sneak out and take her as his bastard. Now, Matt, the Sphinx, who people believe is Sarella Sand,
the
is
riddle.
There, is the riddle, and who is also close with someone from Dorne. Not just any of the maesters, but close with a Dornish maester in Marwyn the Mage. So that to me is like, holy smokes. And then also the whole thing is that the only other person who says the phrase like the dragon must have three heads is like either in a vision to Dany herself or the Sphinx. Or I think you go look it up on a search of Ice and Fire though. Outside of known Targaryens, the only person to really say it or for it to be said around is the freaking Sphinx. So, and then you're like, well, it must be some Targaryen connection there. So I just want to throw that out there as a quick plug, because now Marwyn is connected to the Martells, who are connected to the Targaryens. And that's the family that I think people forget. Elia Martell was married in, had children, and they were close. Prince Luwin fought with Rhaegar, all these different things, right? Interesting. So just to kind of shore some of this up, the Marwyn-centric comparative family portrait, the elder brother, Sir M, Luwin Martell, they all have thick, square jaws, heavy jaws. Quentin had a heavy jaw. Marwyn the Mage had a slab jaw. You know, just the descriptions go on here. They're all thickly built. They all, dockside thug, mastiff, bull's neck. All of these things sound similar. Arion has a rounded belly. Quentin was too thick around the middle. Marwyn had a round, rock hard ale belly. Let's see. The elder brother, Sir M, Luwin Martell, has an alcoholic's red bulbous nose covered with broken veins. Dorne Martell has alcohol fueled gout. Quentin has a nose too broad. So you have a broad nose already. You've got the tendency for alcohol, you know, wanting to drink a lot of the Dornish wine and the beginnings of these drinking problems. So this is all kind of fitting together. And then there's the hands. Sam thinks that Marwyn's nose was broken. This connection to the nose. The hands, though, again, all these characters, Marwyn the Mage, Quentin, Doran, the elder brother, they all have these big, they're described as having big, strong hands.
Hands.
So I just found this really interesting that the Martells aren't identical. They're not all the same person after all, but this looks like a bunch of related people being described using different terminology, at least the entire point of creating a mystery be rendered moot by every reader rubbing two gray cells together. There's nothing else. There's nothing here to rule out the hypothesis, and it's bursting with storytelling possibility. So what he's saying is that like there's a subtlety here in just the description and the commonality. You know, again, it's the seed is strong was what this a Game of Thrones is all you're looking at physical characteristics between the like Cersei's children and she and Jaime, and the lack thereof of consistency with Robert's bastards. Robert's bastards look totally different. So right. What George has done in this whole series is say, pay attention to the details. Yeah, the seed is strong. And like very much note who is related to who based upon physical characteristics. And like, I mean, he does this with, House Strong, right? With, back in the Dance of Dragons. So, you know, that's they're bastards, the bastard strongs. So, I think it's interesting that he does this quite often, and it's something that he's doing here with the elder brother. Okay, so let's move on. Martells marry their bannermen. I'll quickly note one other guy who looks like a Martell cousin. Okay, we don't really need to do this. He's talking about Sir Archibald Ironwood, who is 6.5 feet tall, broad shoulders, huge belly, with legs as a tree trunk, hands the size of hams, and no neck to speak of. So again, too many things connecting. And for right. me, the biggest one was that Marwyn is connected to this. And now you're connecting the elder brother. So this was a cousin. The Martells are marrying into the Ironwoods. So, yeah. All right. Now, he does go on this whole thing. Let me see here. Yeah, there's a whole section that I don't think I'm going to read you guys. I'll summarize it for you. It's the great uncle's are old dudes. Because to dispute this theory, I think a lot of people have said, well, Lou and Martell would be too old. And so if you're kind of not sold on this and you need more evidence that like you could still be a great uncle who was like the last born, you know what I mean? Like of a, yes. of a larger family, you could be born late and so on. I mean, that's really all he does is he goes down and he gets into Lewin's paramour a little bit, talks about their ages. It really convinces. He has dates here where if we assume that Lewin and the Prince of Dorne have the same mother, the math works. If the Prince of Dorne and her mother's age when each first gave birth add up to 30, I mean, dude, he does the math. I'm not even going to go into all of it. It's pretty wild. So if you needed that piece, I think he said, I don't want someone to say that this is a factor as to why the elder brother could not be Lewin Martell. The math does work. There is a way in which it can work. And so he brings that up here. It's a whole paragraph on that. We're going to skip that down to the faceless elder brother Lewin's story. So Lewin can easily be the right age to be the elder brother, Sir M, and the elder brother and Sir M is a perfect match for our family sourced physical image of Lewin Martell. But what do we know about the elder brother, and how does this square with the hypothesis that he's Lewin Martell and or a faceless man? Or a faceless man-esque dude. The elder brother, Sir M, is a healer. The seven have blessed our elder brother with healing hands. Again, a note on the hands. He has restored many a man to health that even the maesters could not cure, and many a woman too. All right. So yet he doesn't have, quote, he doesn't, quote, have the gentle, kindly face Brienne expected. Such a face instantly associates the elder brother with the faceless man called the kindly man. It's an ironic inversion of expectations. The bone breaker heals, while the gentle, kindly face kills, or at least trains killers. It is very ironic. It's a flip. It's an inversion. You know what I mean? He's a knight, a former knight, a once killer who now heals, and this kindly faced man is a freaking assassin over in Braavos. All right. We're about to see that the elder brother / Lewin Martell consistently speaks in pregnant riddles, but his suspicious speech begins when Brienne's party arrives on the Quiet Isle. The elder brother's quote, innocent greeting, not coincidentally evokes the faceless men. So here we go. Here's a quote. It is always a glad day when our friends, Maribald and Dog, honor us with another visit, he announced before turning to the other guest. And new faces are always welcome. We see so few of them. Faces, Matt. You know, just new faces always welcome. All right. Notably, the elder brother does not ask anyone's name, just as we'd expect of the faceless man. Instead, Maribald performed the customary courtesies unbidden. The High Septon, Faceless Man's all-too-generic autobiography, the elder brother's story is curiously impersonal. In true Faceless Man fashion, he names no names. Because of this, it lends itself to decoding if we assume it is not the literal truth, but a genericized version of a past life as formulated by a faceless man trained to a lie. Trained to lie in the faceless man fashion. So, okay, that's all to say that, like, there's a lot of riddles in this, and that what he says might not be. You know, they play that game with the faceless man. They play that like lying game. Arya plays it.
Yes. You have to, like, Arya has to play it.
Right. Exactly. He says there's a version of that kind of going on here, and so I guess I'll read a little bit of it to you. Why would you give up knighthood? I never chose it. My father was a knight, and his before him. So were my brothers, every one. And then some commentary here. Probably mostly true. Given the gap between births of the Prince of Dorne and Lewin Martell, they likely have numerous half-brothers. The Martells are knights who don't emphasize it. Quentin had even taken knighthood at Ironwood's hands in preference to the Red Vipers. So that shows that Quentin and Oberyn are knights. But beyond this, Lewin's brothers are also Kingsguard, every one of them a perforce knight. So here we go. I was trained for battle since the day they deemed me old enough to hold a wooden sword. I saw my share of them and did not disgrace myself. I had women too, and there I did not disgrace myself, for some I took by force. All right, I'm sorry. There I did disgrace myself, for some I took by force. So a good fighter, a lusty and occasionally rapey guy. There was a girl I wish. Yeah, sorry. He's going over all the things.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
From the Elder Brother. There was a girl I wished to marry, the younger daughter of a pretty lord, but I was my father's third-born son and had neither land nor wealth to offer her, only a sword, a horse, a shield. It seems that Lewin Martell loved a girl, and as a younger son, he wouldn't inherit land or overmuch wealth, but might the rest be ironic, a reverse exaggeration. So to call upon sort of the waif's lying game terminology, a prince of Dorne, even the youngest of many, could marry the younger daughter of a pretty lord, right? Perhaps his story is a faceless man speak for, I loved the eldest daughter of a great lord, but was, but because of my birth order, you know, he was denied that chance to marry an eldest daughter. So what he's really saying here is that a lot of what is being said here needs to be taken with some, like, looked at through the lens of he's lying, right? That, like, we just so often believe every word that's said. And what the waif shows us over in Braavos is that, like, it's important to, if you're an assassin and you're telling a story and you're putting on a face and you're creating a different identity, that you have to really be good at selling that. And the Elder Brother is doing that.
Is good at that.
Right, yeah. So when I was not fighting, I was drunk, just as your nose and family history with alcohol addiction suggest. My life was written red in blood and wine. When did it change, Esbrienne? When I died in the Battle of the Trident. It is known. So he says, when I died in the Battle of the Trident. So who died there? It is known that Lewin Martell died. But the Elder Brother tells us several times that on the Quiet Isle, died and dead don't mean died and dead, right? So pretty cool. Another one here. I fought for Prince Rhaegar, though he never knew my name. I could not tell you why, save that the Lord I served a Lord who served a Lord who had decided to support the dragon rather than the stag. He had decided had he decided elsewise, I might have been on the other side of the river. This is a faceless, I'm no one version of Lewin Martell's story. Whereas Lewin Martell was friends with Rhaegar and knew exactly why he fought on his side. The Elder Brother pleads too perfectly, anonymity, meaning like he's not, he's trying to distance himself from being anyone that could be easily identified. So this is where you have to get a little tinfoil with it and say, you have to kind of believe that if this guy has already established, our theorist here has already established that there is a neo-faith, that there's a lot of connections, you know, between him not having a kindly face. Like, if you can buy that there is somehow a connection between this group and this faction and the faceless man, then you look at the faceless man and you say, what are other things that they do? They lie and they twist, distort the truth in a way that protects their identity to some degree or whatever. And that's essentially what goes on here. And so the rest of this is really just, let me finish two more and then we're done here. So the battle was a bloody thing. The singers would have us believe it was all Rhaegar and Robert struggling in the stream for a woman who both they claimed to love. But I assure you, other men were fighting too, and I was one. I took an arrow through the thigh and another through the foot, and my horse was killed from under me. Yet I fought on. I can still remember how desperate I was to find another horse, for I had no coin to buy one. Without a horse, I would no longer be a knight. That was all that I was thinking of, in truth be told. If truth be told, right there. That was all I was thinking of, if truth be told. That was another thing that he said, like, the fact that you say that sometimes indicates that maybe the truth isn't being told here, right? I never saw the blow that felled me. I heard hooves behind my back and thought a horse. But before I could turn, something slammed into my head and knocked me back into the river where by rights I should have drowned. So with the exception of the I was a poor hedge knight passage regarding the horse, this echoes what we're told of Lewin Martell's death. Prince Lewin had been sorely wounded by the time the tide of the battle swept him to his final dance with Lady Forlorn. So he was already wounded, like in this person, again, the Elder Brother saying, I was shot in the leg and in the foot. And then so that kind of fits up. And then just one more here. Instead, I woke up here upon the quiet isle. The elder brother told me I had washed up on the tide, naked as my name day. I can only think that someone found me in the shallows, stripped me of my armor, my boots, my breeches, pushed me back out into the deeper water. The river did the rest. We were all born naked, and so I suppose it was only fitting that I came into my second life the same way. I spent the next 10 years in silence, and here's his commentary on that. So Lewin Martell died, but survives via mysterious circumstances and spends 10 years training as a faceless man slash becoming indoctrinated into the faceless man, which he calls his second life since he is dead. Are decoys used that day on the Trident? Does a petty knight dress as Lewin and die at the hands of Lynn Corbray? More importantly, does Rhaegar pull a similar switch, possibly involving his rubies and a glamour? Before you dismiss this, consider the belief that Renly has risen from the dead when Garland wears his armor. The Hound slash Rorg confusion, and read the long discussion of the Battle of the Seven Stars in the World of Ice and Fire to be discussed below. So that is sort of part one to this whole thing. And the idea that, and it's sometimes hard to read because there's just so much going on there.
Yeah, but Matt, there's a lot of content in this. Yeah.
Right. And that's just, again, he goes on in great detail with other stuff. But to me, what was cool is that you took all these different physical descriptions of the Martells. And now I understand the Martells more so. And I know to look out for those connections. And you took what the elder brother, you just can't take. It's so shrouded in mystery. There's so many things going on. The grave diggers in front of us being posing as a different person. This whole group, they show nothing. They show nothing of their faces except their eyes. They are faceless, in fact. And they are on a quiet isle, right? So, like, not one where you're going to, you know, not a lot is said. And like, if the truth be told, there's just too many things as I was reading. I was just like, okay, this is really good. And I read part two, equally as good. Equally as good, with other connections, goes down different paths. And so I guess for you guys, just some food for thought in terms of like who these people could be. Sir, let me pull this guy up here real quick. Sir Morgarth. I know, I think I was saying, I might be saying it, Morgarth. Yeah. Morgarth, yeah. The Merry. Yeah. Is a hedge.
Yes. Now. So I'm trying to do math over here, mm-hmm. because, you know, he's the idea of like the elder brother, right?
Yeah.
You know, but the elder brother told me I had washed up on this isle, all these stuff. Well, I mean, Doran Martell is a brother of the Kingsguard, is how he is described. And I'm trying to see exactly like how old he would be if this were. To
you mean Lewin Martell? How old he is?
Lewin Martell, excuse me. Yeah,
yeah.
So Lewin Martell dies in 283, but he's brought into the Kingsguard during the service of Aerys the Second. Aerys's reign is like 243 to 283, I think.
Right.
Just to try to see, like, is he the oldest Kingsguard member? During the
let me pull up the Mad King's Kingsguard.
Because he's definitely old. He's older than Barristan Selmy. I know that for sure. Right. And he's certainly older than Jaime, and probably older than Arthur Dayne.
Right. Tommen, here we go. Aerys. Okay, Sir Gerald Hightower, Prince Lewin.
Gerald Hightower might be old.
Yeah, he was at the time the Lord Commander known as the White Bull.
Actually, Barristan something might be older than him.
Yeah,
Barristan fights with like Dunk.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, what's interesting about the elder brother is that like so Lou this whoever this guy is that is now the elder brother was found by the elder
brother.
Yeah, so he becomes this title. So. And that's interesting.
So what I'm saying is the current elder brother what he's saying is could be Lewin Martell. And of course it's the idea is like the elder brother, but George does love to play with these, like connecting this piece to this piece.
Yeah.
And so Lewin Martell he is actually a younger brother in his family. he has a True. Brother that is a prince of Dorne that's unknown. We don't know. A princess of Dorne. That's unknown. That's his only direct relative. And then he has he has tons of nieces and nephews and stuff like that. So he is Dorne Martell's uncle. But the idea that he could be a brother, the elder brother inside of the Kingsguard as well, too, could be like, these are the type of things that George does where it's like, okay, here's this tiny little thing that's going to come up and over here. And yeah, he's also an elder brother in the Kingsguard.
Right. So, oh my gosh. So they're saying approximately Lewin Martell was like 235 AC. This is just, these are all approximates. People have gone back, like, there's a range. Quite definitely.
Yeah, it's definitely a range because he dies in 283. And so Jaime gets brought in, I think, at like 15, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, minimally, it would have, if he was only in the Kingsguard for like a year, that would put him at 283 minus 15, which is probably like, 250 something, mm-hmm. or 260 something. So 283 minus 15. But he's obviously 271 would be like the absolute minimum. But I'm sure he's probably a lot older than 15. So now you're talking 260, something like that. So he's probably the second oldest or something in the Kingsguard. So that would make him an elder brother to a lot of people. So it's important, when wins comes out, and to go back and really trying to dive into some more of this stuff too. If I could be going on a total side tangent here, none of this stuff could have any of the connections to it.
Yeah.
But it's like because there's not really that many quotes about him, but to see anything that anybody ever says, because there's a quote about him from Jaime Lannister when he's talking to the current members of the Kingsguard. He says, I learned from the White Bull and Barriss and the Bold. I learned from Sir Arthur Dayne, the Sword of the Morning, who could have slain all of the five of you with his left hand while he was taking a pee with his right. I learned from Prince Lewin of Dorne and Sir Oswald Went, good men, everyone. That's really about it. Aerys Okart says, I never had the honor to know him, but everyone agrees he was a great knight.
Right.
So there's not a lot of quotes about him.
Right. Yeah. And so that is a tough one.
Killed by Lyn Corbray, right? And Lyn Corbray does have a Valyrian steel sword.
Yeah.
Lady Forlorn, which is one of those, I don't know that did we actually ever see it? Yes, we do. But it's just one of those where it's briefly mentioned that it happens to be Valyrian steel.
Hmm. Yeah, interesting. So declarant, that's interesting, because what is said is that so you have Lyn Corbray is there near the Lord's Declarant, and he's there with near Peter Baelish. And if you want to go a step further with this, Morgarth the Merry, if that is, because he's this theorist was alleging that this is a guy who has broken his a bulbous nose with broken veins and large gnarled hands. He has a red. Yeah. Okay. He's burly, and he has a thick salt pepper beard. So he basically said that. So we've done a lot of stuff with the elder brother, but then I have to look at when this comes up. When is he mentioned exactly, which chapter he's in chapter 41 of A Feast for Crows. Where is the elder brother mentioned here? When does she come across him? Chapter 31. Okay, so later on, 10 chapters later, is that right? 10 chapters later, she comes across a guy in the service, so Morgarth the Merry, who has a very similar descriptive sort of grew out a beard, has a red bulbous nose. I don't know how he made that. That's just all just description. And that, but what's interesting is that Lyn Corbray is there, and they're about to have a tournament. They're about to have a big, the winged knighted, whatever, freaking trying to find Sweet Robin's eight members of his little guard, right? He's trying to get, he wants similar to what Tommen has. Tommen has seven, so he wants eight. But Lyn Corbray could go up against this Sir Morgarth the Merry, who, if that guy is the elder brother who is Lewin Martell, I mean, that's a rematch. That's a rematch of what happens in the Battle of the Triton. So if that's the case, that would be really, really kind of cool. Not saying it's going to go that far, because, again, that character is just a hedge knight who not much is said at all. But again, if you go with the idea that these are faceless men, they might be assuming different identities. And when you describe a hedge knight, if you're George R. R. Martin and you describe a hedge knight whose description is very similar, except for a little beard, a little stubble, but is almost identical to the elder brother, then you might say, okay, we've got like the face may even be a little different and the beard's growing out or something. But if that is the same guy, then holy crap, maybe they are doing some faceless men Westerosi activity, which would be kind of crazy.
Yes.
All tinfoil, yeah. Matt. But I mean, it's like, I love that.
I don't know, man. That's pretty Valyrian steel tinfoil to me. I mean,
yeah,
it's,
right.
It's looking pretty legit. And this is just part one. So there's a part two and a part three we'll have to do as well.
Right, exactly. And they're buried down in here. And I can put, you know, again, I skipped over some of the math or whatever, and we can maybe talk about that in part two or something. But like it for him, it did work out. He tried to figure out that approximate age of Prince Lewin Martell. And even just like how he would be related in terms of an elder brother to some of the Kingsguard members, as Matt was just figuring out. And then even like an elder brother, maybe to like who, like Marwyn the Mage, where does he, is he an elder brother? Like, is Marwyn his younger brother, or is Marwyn related to Oberyn and Doran Martell, things like that? You know, we don't really know where Marwyn would fit in. And does that help this with this idea? Cause again, it could just be the title, the elder brother, which is fine.
Right.
Because they're on this island. But dude, I just was like, for me, because I'm a big fan of Marwyn the Mage and knowing where the heck all of that's going, when he tied me that he convinced me that and maybe that's been a known thing for people. And honestly, guys, I've read the series numerous times and I love going back and rereading it. I never really associated Marwyn the Mage with House Martell. I just didn't. I don't know. It's right there. Marwyn, Lewin, you know, Oberyn. Quentin, Tristane, it's right there. And it's really cool. And again, the Sphinx association there is cool. And then now possibly this Lewin thing. Now, I don't know though, the whole connection between Sansa and the elder brother and Brienne seems kind of odd. Like maybe he's just biding his time doing his thing, because you see, they would be more if you're a Martell, you'd be more interested in Targaryen style stuff, right? You'd be more interested in like Danny and young Griff, and maybe that will come at one point. But the other theory, and I just want to mention this for folks to run down and have fun with, is that he is a member. He was the third son. If you take that story and you don't think there's some faceless man like lying or deception going on, and you take the story as to who he is and how he fought and the Lord, you know, the lesser Lord of a Lord or whatever, and he's the third son, he could be from House Dairy, and he could have been a knight that has survived that could be an heir, because right now House Dairy is without an heir. There could be a bastard out there. He might, this elder brother guy could fit that, but he seems to be physically described. And again, we'd have to go look at some of the other members. We looked at John Dairy. John Dairy was mentioned in this, and as people who were close to Sir Arthur Dayne and, you know, his death and just around him. So yeah, I don't know. But it just causes you to think so much about a character that I haven't thought much about at all. And
yeah,
you know what I mean? Zero agreed. Thoughts. Really?
Yeah, agreed.
So yeah, this hopefully.
I love these when it focuses on a character that it's like, oh man, just haven't really.
Right.
These, it just can show you the minor characters as well as the Song of Ice and Fire community, like really diving in hard on a lot of these. Like, I mean, just characters that you read with just such a passing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and then the other thing is that, like, you, because this is a big tie back to the histories. So it's like they mention all of these, I don't know, like Kingsguard and these other people who are connected to Sir Arthur Dayne. And it's like it's a dive back down in the histories. But what the reason with it that the theories do that is because our freaking characters do it. Like, Jamie is often thinking about the Smiling Knight, and I've gone down this whole Kettle Black idea that it's one of the Kettle Blacks that he's going to have to face as a Smiling Knight. They're all described as freaking smiling, and they're the bane of his, you know, like right now he hates them. Some of them are hooking up with his sister Cersei and then replacing him as a Kingsguard member. So, but he thinks about the Smiling Knight, and then he thinks about Sir Arthur Dayne, the other King's guard members. And so when they reflect on those characters, it's important. You know, when Dany reflects on Rhaegar and Robert's Rebellion is just where it's at. everything yeah. about that rebellion is so like the tourney at Harrenhal, all of it. George did such a good job in creating a sort of a prologue or whatever, a massive prologue or starter to this whole war. And from that, there were secrets, there were backstabbings, there were bastard children, there were affairs, there were things that were going on that caused all of this to be really intricate. And now in our story, some of the major players in this Game of Thrones, the Song of Ice and Fire, are shrouded in mystery. And I love that this Reddit user said that, like, we're not meant to, our characters just believe, like, Sir Morgarth. It's just, he's a hedge knight. No big deal. Don't look any closer at his physical description, and don't even think for a second that, by the way, this guy didn't just find another character who had a bulbous nose and big hands and big shoulders in anywhere in the story. He found in the same book, in the same Brienne chapters, doing a Brienne point of view read through, a character who she had just met 10 chapters prior, who was described the same way. That is what I call like proximity to a character, and in a story and in a plot line that's meant to help you make that connection. Even though George doesn't give you all the Brienne chapters all in a row, they're all kind of spread out. But if you're paying close enough attention, you'll see that she just encountered someone like that. Maybe. Very tinfoil, but... And again, he could also be just regurgitating descriptions sometimes to help him get through these things. That's another thing. He might have just, you know, went in there and went at it and said, let's just make this guy have a... Let's just throw people off a little bit. You know what I mean? Make it not... more ambiguous. And that's okay, too. But...
Yeah. Oh, we're gonna have to do part two and part three of this.
Yeah, it's sick. It's really good. And then the offshoots too. There's some really good ones, which we can do those for Patreon. But really good offshoot ideas and thoughts. And the fact I've Sir Shadrick being Hallen Reed, I've never given that much weight. But when you have people like this say it, I'm like, oh, let's go look at it. You know, let's maybe right the Mad Mouse.
Yeah. Sure, yeah. You never know, man.
Never know.
You never know. It's all connected, Ez.
It
how
is.
We end it. That's how we end all these theories, by saying it's all connected. So Awesome. Yeah, well, you guys stay tuned. We'll definitely have to do part two and part three of this. And, of course, we do have the prologue of A Storm of Swords coming as well as some Patreon content coming your guys' way. Probably plan a Zoom hangout going here soon.
Yeah,
have to take a look at the old calendar here as I know plan it, and we'll announce that on Facebook and Twitter and everywhere. So all right, guys, so with that, stay tuned. As always, be sure to follow us on social media. You can follow me anywhere at Super Games Bros, as anywhere at WompRat_2M. You can check out our other projects as well. We do Star Wars Hyperspace Hangout, Wheel of Time, which is Heroes of the Horn. We cover Harry Potter. You're just about to finish the first book, a Sorcerer's Stone or Philosopher's Stone for those of you over there in England.
Yeah.
And talk about the first movie. And then, of course, Secrets of Dumbledore is coming as well. So you can check that out. And we have tons of content on Apple Premium and Patreon that will be pulling over and all that stuff. So you can guys check that out as always. Anyway, guys, thank you for listening. Hope you have a great rest of your day. And remember that winter is coming.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.